Good morning. Today's daf and kedushin is Tez Zion. Thank Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is Lanozeich and Ishmas Libigar Viela Bashmuel. We're on the bottom of Tez Vav Amud Beis. A discussion has turned to Eved Ivri. The Mishnah on Yudal Amud Beis introduces to the topic of Eved Ivri. And like the first Mishnah, Masechta back on Beis Amud Aleph, so the Mishnah is talking about how to get into this relationship. It's a contractual relationship. How to get into the relationship and how to get out of the relationship. Eved Ivri comes in four different types. One Eved Ivri is a person steals, caught stealing, that cannot afford paying back the item that he stole, and so Beis Din is going to sell him into Avdus. That's Eved Ivri Shemachu Beis Din. Second type of Eved Ivri is a person is indigent and he sells himself. That parsha finds itself in Bahar, in Perek Chaf Hei. And there he either sells himself to a Jew or he sells himself to a non-Jew. There are two parshios back to back in Parshas Bahar describing that, and that's called what's called Mocher Satzmo. And then Ama Ivriya. Ama Ivriya is also another type of Eved Ivri. Obviously it refers to a woman. Father has the right to sell his daughter who's a Katana, and she then will serve as an Ama Ivriya. And those are four different types of an Eved Ivri. So it's indentured servitude. They're not slaves, they're not owned, it's not chattel, and they start off as Jews and they remain as Jews. With one notable exception, which we already pointed out a couple of times, and that is that an Eved Ivri, which is sold by Beis Din, is allowed to be paired with a Shivcha Kananis that's owned by the owner, and they'll have children, and those children will belong to the owner. It's not a marriage, Phil and I just discussing. It's certainly not a marriage. It's also for a Jew to marry a Shivcha Kananis, but it gives the Eved Ivri is given that one particular allowance, if you will. We learned just yesterday's daf that that's the pshat in the parsha in the pasuk in Parshas Re'eh. When the Torah in Parshas Re'eh describes his work, the Torah just says he's on double duty. He's working during the day and he's working during the night as well. Working during the day, we understand that's his employment. Working at night, now we understand. Now we have a new understanding of what it means though, to work at night, in the sense that he's going to be basically breeding. It's a little bit of an offensive term, but he's going to be breeding for his master. Okay, those are the things that we saw yesterday. The discussion that we had yesterday is that when someone is sold to a guy, so he can be redeemed. The Torah in Parshas Bahar describes a redemption, a process of redemption. So what exactly happens when someone sponsors his redemption? So we had a machlokas between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Yossi in terms of who the sponsor of the redemption is and what results from that sponsorship. So let's say he sells himself off to a guy, and let's say either the Torah describes his uncle or his cousin redeeming him, a family member. So what happens? So a machlokas between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Yossi Aglili, exactly, either he's going to go free, or he's going to go under their employment. In other words, it's just going to be a transfer of employment. And also they argue in terms of whether you have an outsider sponsoring his redemption, meaning not a family member. So once again, Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Yossi Aglili have a machlokas in terms of what the result is. And after a couple of tries, the Gemara ends up by saying that what they're arguing about is svara. They have different svaras in terms of why it is that either they're going to switch employment or they're going to be totally freed. And we went over this at the end of yesterday's daf. And Amar Bichia Baraba, Amar Rav Yochanan. And finally, we are in the bottom of Tezvav Amud Beis. After citing the machlokas between Rav Yossi Aglili and Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara quotes in the name of Rav Yochanan, these are the words of Rav Yossi Aglili and Rabbi Akiva, V'chachamim Omrim, Hakol L'Shechur. According to the Chachamim, anytime someone sponsors his freedom, it could be either A, his family member, his uncle or his cousin, B, his an outsider, or C, even himself. It doesn't matter. Anybody who frees him, so, who sponsors his geula, he's going to be freed. Now, man chachamim rabbihi. Now, the Gemara says, now, this shitas chachamim, which is identified by Rav Yochanan, which is in fact the halacha. That's how the Rambam rules. So who is it? It's Rebbe. Demapik le'lahai be'ela le'drasha achrina. Now, as far as the word Eila, because remember at the end of yesterday's daf, so we spent a considerable amount of time saying that the word Eila is an exclusionary term. meaning he doesn't always go free. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. But the Gemara says that according to Rabbi, the word Eila is learned for a totally different drasha. So therefore, Eila is removed from the discussion, and now Mikra Nidrash Bein Lafanav Bein La'acharav. And then we go back to what we also discussed at the end of yesterday's daf, where you find in the Pasuk and Parshas Bahar a description of, number one, his family being goel him. That was Dodo ben Dodo. Then number two, he himself redeeming himself. Somehow he comes onto money. And finally, number three, an outsider. And remember, we discussed yesterday, it's one of the possibilities. It's a question that we know for sure that if he sponsors his own redemption, obviously he goes free. And it's just a question of whether or not that's going to influence the one before or the one after. And the Gemara points out that according to Rebbe, you don't have to choose. It influences both. Whatever the halach is for number two, which is he goes free, is also going to be true for number one and number three as well. Okay. So then the Gemara says, okay, now I'll ask you a very simple question. What does it mean when the Torah says that he's going to go free in Shnasei Yovel? Meaning, right now, we have it that according to Rebbe, if anyone sponsors his redemption, he's going to go free. So then, what are we doing waiting for Yovel? Answers the Gemara, Mibai Lelecha D'Tanya. The Gemara says, it comes to teach us the following. V'yatza b'shnasei Yovel. The Brice over here says that he goes free in Shnasei Yovel. Be'ove kochavim, sheyesh natachas yadcha. It's describing the following. He was indigent. He sold himself to a non-Jew. But not a non-Jew living outside of Eretz Yisrael, a non-Jew living inside Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, since he's living inside Eretz Yisrael, he's under the jurisdiction of Torah law. Torah law is that in the Yovel year, everyone has to release their avadim, their avid ivri. And this non-Jew, who's living in Israel, under Torah law, under jurisdiction of Yovel, so therefore, he too, even though he's not Jewish, he too also has to release his Eved Ivri that he owns in the Yovel year. That's what the Torah is describing. And then the Brice entertains the idea, well, maybe it's talking about a non-Jew living outside of Eretz Yisrael. To which the Gemara says, really? Well, why would he listen to you? Meaning he's a non-Jew living outside of Eretz Yisrael, is not bound by Yovel law. So now, here comes the Yovel year. And now the Jewish slave owned by the non-Jew is going to say, you know, it's time to release me. The non-Jew is going to say, why? Oh, because this thing called Yovel. Non-Jew is going to be like, okay, that's nice. Okay, go get me my shoes. He's just simply not going to care. He's not bound by the halachas of Yovel. So the only thing the Torah is describing is a non-Jew owning a Jewish Eved Ivri in Eretz Yisrael. That's what the Torah is describing.
The non-Jew has to return property that he buys also?
Excellent question. Correct. In other words, my gut reaction is yes. If he's living in Eretz Yisrael and he's bound by Yovel law, I would say yes. But I'm not convinced I'm right. But that's my initial reaction. Uvishtar. And now we go on. The Mishnah that we started yesterday on Yudal Amud Beis, 2 days ago actually, introduced us to the two different ways that an Eved Ivri is acquired. What is the mechanism of Kenyan? So number one was Kesef. So we spent from the Mishnah till about now with various tangents. So discussing how we know that they can be Kone B'Kesef. Now we are up to Shtar. How do I know that an Eved Ivri is nicknamed B'Shtar? So the Gemara discusses, Minala Namar Ula Makra Ima Cherzi Kachlo. So the Torah gives what is a very simple proof and a source of the Torah. And that is the Torah describes where the person who buys for himself the Ama Ivriya takes another wife in addition to her. Im Acherzi Kachlo. And the Torah says, "Sherek susavona avona soid lo yigara." All the regular responsibilities that a husband has to his wife, he has to have towards his other wife. He has to have to the Ama Ivriya that he ended up marrying as well. Anyway, what do we see here in the Torah? The Torah equates the acquisition of an Ama Ivriya in addition to a quote unquote regular wife. Now, what do we know? He kisha kasev la'acheres, ma'acheres mikna b'shtar, a regular wife. How is she acquired? Through shtar. I mean, also kesef and also bia. But right now, shtar. Af ami ivriya miktam b'shtar. So an ami ivriya is also going to be acquired with a shtar as well. So this is a drasha that teaches us an ami ivriya can be acquired with shtar, since we learned it from the... from the hekesh that the Torah creates. Anich laman damar shtar ame ivriya adon kosvo. Now the Gemara says, now this is a great hekesh, but only under the following assumption. As we're about to learn in just a moment, there is a machlokus between the Amorayim. When you buy an ame ivriya using a shtar, who is the writer of the shtar? Who writes up the shtar? So here, without knowing the machlokus, and if we were left to think about it, well, who normally, this goes back to a discussion we had earlier in the Masechta. When selling a property, I understand it's not equitable, but it's not perfectly parallel. But when selling a property, who's the writer of the shtar?
The seller.
So the seller is writing the shtar saying, I'm selling the property to you. Okay. In a marriage, who's writing up a shtar? The buyer. The husband who's buying the wife is the one writing up the shtar. So in terms of the Gemara earlier contrasted these two, and the Gemara pointed out that it's strange, it's odd. And it wasn't the Gemara's only reaction to this oddity, but basically the Gemara says, Halacha Moshe Mitzinai, meaning that's just simply the way it is. So in a regular Mekach U'Memkar, the shtar is written up by the seller. In a marriage, the shtar is written up by the buyer, given from the buyer to the seller, from the husband to the wife. Now in the Ama Ivriya, so here it's fair now to be confused, and you don't have to worry about being confused because, as we're going to see in just a moment, it's a machlokas. But who's going to write up the shtar for whom? So on one hand, it's not a marriage, but that's the objective. Eventually, the idea is the father selling his daughter as an Ama Ivriya with the hope, and first goal, that the ultimate goal, that the owner is going to end up marrying her, right? The marriage is called yud. Okay. On the other hand, right now, as the contract is being written up, what essentially is happening is the daughter is being sold. Okay. So, and the father is the seller. So, once again now, who's the writer up of this contract? So that's exactly the tension over here in terms of who should be doing it. On one hand, it's the father because he is selling his daughter. On the other hand, the owner who's buying her is also hopefully going to marry her. Okay. Everyone follows the tension over here? Right, it's a potential marriage. So, the Gemara says like this. The Hekesh was a wonderful Hekesh, especially if you're of the opinion that who's going to end up writing the contract? The owner. Because then it's going to be extraordinarily similar. Not extraordinarily similar. It is parallel to a regular marriage. So if the owner is going to be running up the shtar, the hekesh is great. But if you're of the opinion that the father is writing up the contract, so then it's not a good parallel. In fact, it's reversed. It's inverted. It doesn't follow a regular shtar of a marriage. So now the Gemara introduces us to the machlokas shtar ame ivriya mikosvo. Who's the author? Who writes up the document? So Rav Huna amar adon kosvo. So Rav Huna is of the opinion that it's the owner who writes up the shtar. And Rav Chista amar av kosvo. And Rav Chista is of the opinion that the father writes up the contract. So hanichal Rav Huna. So according to Rav Huna, we're done. Meaning we have a hekesh, and it's a wonderful hekesh because it really does parallel marriage. It's just like a marriage. El Rav Chista, Michael Member, but according to Rav Chista, it's not good. Because according to Rav Chista, the father's running up the shtar, and that's not what happens in a marriage. The father, who is a representative, obviously, of his daughter, is that you don't have the daughter in a marriage, or the woman, I should say, in a marriage running up the shtar, you have the husband. So it's not a parallel. So,
when did we say that the father sells it, not the shtar, and later on when the husband. When he marries her, he makes
it. You could say that, but right now what the Gemara wants to focus in on is the Kinyan Ama Ivriya, which is done through a shtar. What's the source? And if the entire source is the Hekesh,
Yeah, but she's not yet his wife. I mean,
okay, that's understood. But we're not right now. Not at the end where hopefully the father's gonna. Sorry, the owner's gonna end up marrying her. We're not there. Okay, so Amar Avachar by Yaakov Amakra Lo Seitzei Kitzeitz Avadim. So the Gemara says, okay, we're gonna go back to the Parsha of Amma Ivriya, back in Parsha's Mishpatim, and when the Torah talks about her release, she's not to be released like a regular Eved Kenani. Now, and we'll come back to that point in just a moment in terms of what exactly the Torah is driving at. But what she can do, meaning inferentially, we're going to learn out that although her exit is not going to be like an Eved Kenani, her entrance into becoming an Amma Ivriya is just going to be like an Eved Kenani. My Nihu. Now, how do you purchase an Eved Kenani? One of the ways that you purchase an Eved Kenani is with a shtar. The Gemara says that's it. That will become our source. So the Ema of Niktesi Bekinyan Avadim or My Nihu Chazaka. Well, the Gemara says, well, wait one second. When you're buying an Eved Kenani, Ishtar is not the only way that you can buy Eved Kenani. You can also buy Eved Kenani with Chazaka. Now, parenthetically, you can also buy Eved Kenani with Kesef. But the Gemara doesn't need that right now because we already know that you can get an Eved Ivri with Kesef. That's already been established. So that's why Kesef is not even on the table for discussion. But Chazaka should be. So once we know that, although her exit's not going to be like an Eved Kenani, her entrance is going to be like an Eved Kenani. Eved Kenani is nicknamed because of Ishtar v'Chazaka. So now the Gemara wants to know, okay, now that we're here, so instead of looking at Ishtar, why don't we look at Chazaka? Now, it's not even a parenthetical point. How are you Kone and Eved Kenani with Chazaka? So Chazaka means a proprietary act. So when it comes to property, you put a fence around the property. That's a proprietary act. When it comes to an Eved Kenani, so you have them work for you. Right, you'll put my shoes on. Right? That's a proprietary act. And that is a means of kinyan. So the Gemara says, so why doesn't Chazaka become a means of kinyan in terms of the Amma Ivriya? So Amar Krav, Yitznachaltam Osam Levnechem Acharechem Osam B'Chazaka. Velo Acher B'Chazaka. So the Gemara, and we're going to see this drasha a couple of times this morning, the Torah talks about the, when you die, part of your estate is going to be an Eved Kenani. Right. Well, like we've discussed numerous times, an Eved Kenani is owned, it's property, and that gets passed on to the next generation. So the rights to the Eved Kenani, really the ownership of the Eved Kenani, goes to the next generation. And the Gemara says, and v'iznachatam osam livnechem acherechem, osam b'chazaka v'lo acher b'chazaka. Now, they are acquired, meaning the osam is a miyad. They are acquired through chazaka, but somebody else is not acquired through a chazaka. Somebody else which is similar. Not the same, but similar. And what is that? And that's an Amma Ivriya. An Amma Ivriya is not going to be acquired, or for that matter, any type of Eved Ivri. It's not going to be acquired through chazaka. Okay. Ve'ema osam b'shtar v'lo acher b'shtar. So the Gemara says, wait one second. All we have is a miyad. So we know that we're excluding something. Why did you choose chazaka to be excluded? Why not exclude shtar? So the Gemara says, "Haksiv lo teitze kitzeis avadim." So the Gemara says, "Yeah, remember, but we also have the ribui, meaning the ribui taught us that although the Amma Ivriya doesn't leave like an Eved Kenani, but she enters like an Eved Kenani. So now, basically, what we have is we have a ribui and we have a miut. So we know that we're going to include one method of kinyan, and we know that we're going to exclude one method of kinyan. So the Gemara says, okay." Now, you decided that the inclusion is going on shtar, and the exclusion is going on chazaka. But that wasn't in the psukim. So the Gemara's next question is, Umar Isa. So what made us determine that the inclusion on shtar and the exclusion on chazaka? Mistabra shtar havalei l'ribuye. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why it's more logical. Shekein Mosiyah Babas Yisrael. Because as it relates to the union of marriage, obviously, what is more applicable? Shtar. Look at how marriage terminates. How does marriage terminate? Shtar. Marriage doesn't terminate any other way. Now, yes, it's true, marriage does terminate with death of the husband. But in terms of the husband being alive, there's only one way that marriage ends, and that's with a shtar. So if that's true on the back end, it's also going to be true on the front end as well. Meaning in terms of the entrance into this union, shtar. So, adarabah chazaka havala l'ribuy shekein kone b'nechse agir. Gemara says, yes, you're right, but I will say this. Chazaka is also very powerful. I'll give you a good litmus test in terms of how powerful Chazaka is. Chazaka is so powerful that it allows you to acquire Nechze Hagir. You have a convert, converted to Yiddishkeit, amassed an estate, and he has no children, no wife, no children, and he dies. Who inherits it? The answer is nobody. Anybody who converts is a born again, and and therefore has no halachic relatives. Now, you have now an estate that is owned by nobody. How does somebody how does someone acquire that estate? Well, first one there gets to acquire it, meaning it's, at this point in time, it all belongs to nobody. It's now officially hefker, and you have to make a kinyan. How do you make a kinyan on it? Kinyan chazaka, meaning when it comes to the land of the nechse hager, so a simple act of chazaka will acquire it. What does that show us? That when it comes to chazaka, chazaka is so powerful. Generally speaking, by kinyanim, I need a makne and a kona. I need two sides of an acquisition. Chazaka, you don't even need that. Chazaka, you have now property which is ownerless, and I come along, I almost literally stake my claim on the property, I do some form of chazaka, and I own it. Shows you how strong chazaka is. So the Gemara now is trying to argue, look, I'm with you, shtar is very good, but chazaka is also very good. So the Gemara says, be'ishas mi'alo ashkecha. And the Gemara says, yeah, but, we are now discussing an Amma Ivriya. Now again, the objective of the Amma Ivriya is that hopefully she'll get married to the owner. So this is really a form of Ishus. In the world of Ishus, you don't have anything. Chazaka plays no role in the world of Ishus, but Shtar does. So ultimately, when all said and done, if we're going to do any type of inclusion, it's going to be Shtar, not Chazaka. Also, the Gemara notes that basically it's the same point, but you could see the point in the actual Hekesh itself. Because in the Hekesh itself, what are we doing? We're making a parallel between your Amma Ivriya and your wife. Where your wife, the word shtar is relevant. And as far as get, as far as kiddushin is concerned, shtar is relevant. So on the parallel, on the Amma Ivriya parallel, so we're going to use shtar, not chazaka. So you see in the Hekesh itself, it's more mistaber to talk shtar as opposed to chazaka. Okay, where do we stand right now? So now we know that when it comes to the Amma Ivriya, a second way of making a kinyan on an Amma Ivriya is with shtar. How do I know that? So it's based on the Hekesh. Although, admittedly...
It doesn't tell who writes it, though.
Huh?
It doesn't resolve who's writing.
No, that's subject to a machlokas. But the Gemara points out... The Hekesh is a little bit trickier for Rav Chista because the father's writing the shtar, and that's not a good parallel. Okay, but the Gemara says it's mistaber. Now, the Rav Huna, Hilo Seitz, Ketzes Avadim, my Darish Bey. Now, according to Rav Huna, I don't even need the drasha of Lo Seitz, Ketzes Avadim because, according to Rav Huna, the parallel was perfect. And I didn't need then the inclusion, exclusion, what's more mistaber. I didn't need any of that according to Rav Huna. So now the Gemara points out that according to Rav Huna, why then is there, what am I going to do with the drasha of lo teitzei ketzei savadim? So the Gemara says, haomi ba'ileisha ina yotze b'roshe evarim ke'evet. Oh. So the Gemara says that for Rav Huna, what it's the Torah is coming to teach us there is something very simple. We know that when it comes to an evet kenani, if... Over the course of work, one of his limbs, one of his extremities gets severed, so he goes free. That results in immediate chavis. So the Gemara says it's exactly what the Torah is teaching us regarding the Amma Ivriya. That's not true for the Amma Ivriya. It doesn't result in immediate chavis. V'Rav Chista. Now Rav Chista agrees with that point. Where does he get that point from? Where does he derive it? Im kein lichtov kra lo seitzei kavadim. My kitzeis ha'avadim shma minatarte. Okay, so basically he teases it out of the extra letters in the Torah. We have the Torah could have written lo seitzei ka'avadim. What does it mean? Kitzeis ha'avadim. The extra chav, the extra hay. So two halachas to be generated. Number one, the Amma Yivriya does not leave with the Rosh HaPrakim. And number two is the halacha of shtar. That an Amma Yivriya could be acquired through shtar.
So we haven't resolved two of the halacha powers.
Right. So I mean, just by looking at the notes, so the Rambam goes with the Rav Chista. That the father is going to write it up, although and I guess the svara, although I'm saying this, I didn't see the Rambam, the svara would be that even though eventually it's going to hopefully yield a marriage, but right now it is really the sale of his daughter.
Are we to assume that Neon follows the same course because it's similar?
No, no. Me, no, all this is operating on a Torah level. Mian only operates on a Derabbanan level.
How come we don't discuss it?
It's not the same. It doesn't. Miyun is marriage. The sale of a daughter is not in its current state marriage.
So the husband writes a ketubah for her, like men have brothers.
I assume so. I mean, we've discussed miyun a lot in Yevamos, and I don't have a good memory of that point. The kone es atzmo b'shnayim. Okay, and how do you quiet yourself? So the Mishnah says, Vishnayim, the wonderful Vishanim, and right. I was thinking to myself, I know it's more than two. What's going on over here? And then I realized that I didn't read it correctly. Okay, so let's do that again. Vikona satsma Vishanim. So the and one of the ways that an eved reacquires himself or herself is shanim tichziv, and the Gemara says, and we know that because sheshanim yavodu vashvius. Well, the Torah says that, and again, that's in Parshas Mishpatim. So again, you go back to what we learned a couple days ago, machlokus between the Tanakam and Rabbi Eliezer. Is that limited to Machru Beis Din, or is that also going to be true by Mocher Satzmo regarding Sheishanim? Okay, so that was Machlokas Tanaim. But let's just say it nice and simple. This is a halacha in Mishpatim, meaning it has to do with Machru Beis Din, that there's a maximum of 6 years. After 6 years, from day to day, meaning... By the way, it's a little, maybe it's a little bit of a misconception. I don't know how often people think about Eved Ivri in general. But this has nothing to do with Yovel. I'm sorry, let me say it better. It has nothing to do with Shemitah. Meaning the 6 years is just simply, that's the maximum number of years that an Eved Ivri can be assigned for work. So, and it's from day to day. So, once the seventh year begins, that's it. Is at the end of his sixth anniversary, they're having a goodbye party for him. Okay, be Yovel. So, and he also leaves in Yovel. Dichsiv Ashnas Yovel Yavorimach. So here we quote from Parshas Bahar that the Yovel is going to release him. Okay, and Giron Kesef. So, in other words, it's easy. Meaning, Gemara just says. Has just beferish psukim that speak out these halachas. Now Giron Kesef is that basically you figure out what the contracted, you don't figure out, you find out what the contracted price of the original kinyan was. So let's say we're going to work for 6 years, and let's say he bought him for $600 for the 6 years. So prorated, it's $100 per year. Now, if they work 3 years, so now deduct $300. And now, in order for to buy himself or herself out of her contract, so he just simply put in another $300, and that is what's called Giron Kesef. Now, and that's a third means of which they can exit their service, their servitude. I'm a Chizki, I'm a Krava, half day. Now, how do I know that? Because the Torah says vit havdei, and it sounds like the owner is actively involved in the pigeon. How can the owner be actively involved in the pigeon? And the answer is the years that are worked are going to be deducted. So what you do is you deduct based on the years that were worked, based on the prorated amount, and the remainder is going to be if the Eved Ivri can front the money for the remainder, so he's going to go free. Tana, we learned on a brisa. The konas atzma bekesef, uvishav bekesef, uvishtar. According to the brisa, he can acquire himself through either kesef, or if it's not money equivalency, meaning something that has value, or ishtar. Now, bishlam kesef dichsiv mekesef meknaso. Now, the Gemara says, I understand kesef because the Torah says it. Kesef meknaso. And shav kesef nami yashiv geulaso. And as far as shav kesef is concerned, because the Torah says yashiv geulaso, you just simply need to return something to the owner of monetary equivalency. Something of value. So, in other words, he can give his car as a means of buying himself out. Appraising the car, you know, making sure that the appraisal of the car matches whatever is the remaining balance of his contract, and then he could buy himself out as well. Right. So that's a good question. So he came onto money. Maybe an uncle died.
But doesn't he not belong to the?
No, he's not Eved Kenani. He's an Eved Ivri. He's not owned. He's not owned by the owner. He's indebted and he's working. And. Yashiv gulasam rechmana l'rabo shava kesef ke kesef. Ella, haishar hechidami. But the Gemara now wants to know, what do we mean exactly when we say a contract? Meaning, how can a contract buy himself out of the contract? or out of his servitude. Now, so maybe he goes over to his owner and he says, look, I got 3 years left. I owe you $300. To buy myself out of contract, I'll write you an IOU. Now, if the owner wants to accept that, fine. But what bothers the Gemara is, Hainu Kesef. Very interesting. The Gemara says, well, if, as long as the owner is amenable to it, if the owner accepts the IOU note, it's really no different than money. Now, generally speaking, throughout the Gemara, we don't normally find that a note and money are on equal footing with one another. But over here, in this particular context, I don't know if it can be generalized to the rest of the halachas of Mamonos. I don't know how broad an application it is to the rest of Choshen Mishpat, but in this particular halacha, that's absolutely correct. The Gemara is saying it. An IOU note that's accepted by the owner from the Eved Ivri is basically the same thing as money. So if that's true, so really, we're not saying anything new. Shtar is not its own new category. Shtar is basically just another function of money. So, Ella, Shikr Shtar. So the Gemara says, what we must be talking about is that you have to give him a document of emancipation. Much like we've been discussing regarding an Eved Kenani. Every time Eved Kenani is up for discussion, that's not our topic of discussion. We're talking about Eved Ivri. But every time we're talking about Eved Kenani, he doesn't just simply go free. You have to write him a Shtar Shichra. But the Gemara says, but wait 1 second. We're not talking about an Eved Kenani. We're talking about an Eved Ivri. So the Gemara is balking at this suggestion that you have to write him a Shtar Shichra. Shtar Lamali. You really need to write him a letter to release him? You know how you release him? It's really simple. Two witnesses standing there for purpose of verification and just simply say, you can go now. Go ahead. You're good. Or inami bape beidina zil. Or you can do it in front of a beisdin. Either way, why doesn't the simple proclamation, and it doesn't even have to be a proclamation, right? It's just a simple release without a form, without a shtar shichur, and just simply say you can go. And that should be enough. Amar Rava. So Rava says we're going to learn out something very important over here, and that is Osamaris Eved Ivri Gufo Kanui. So we are going to learn something which is going to be a little bit difficult to understand, but it's a basic yisod, and that is that an Eved Ivri is owned to, I'm going to insert the words like almost in parentheses, to a degree, but is owned by his owner. Now I know since the beginning of an Eved Ivri discussion, you know, I tilted a little bit the jury poll because I kept saying again and again, he's not owned, he's a Jew. You don't own a Jew. And that's mostly true. But it's mostly true. And what we're learning right now in the Gemara is it, but that's not perfectly accurate. To a certain degree, the owner has a certain amount of bailus in his Eved Ivri. Now again, he dies, we'll discuss more of this later. If he dies, he doesn't get inherited to the next generation. And he's not chattel. But to a certain degree, he is owned by the owner. And the best way to explain this, as Phil pointed out, the best way to explain this is that when he's an Eved Ivri owned by the owner, so now he could be paired up with a Shifcha Kananis. Now, a Jew can't marry a Shifcha Kananis. A Jew can't cohabit with a Shifcha Kananis. And our Eved Ivri can. Why should that be? It must be that to a certain degree, the owner has a certain amount of ownership in the Eved Ivri, which basically gives him a quasi status of ownership over him, so that now he can be paired up with the Shifcha Kananis. Again, it's not marriage. Once the Eved Ivri goes free, he doesn't take his wife with him because it's not his wife. He doesn't take the kids with him because it's not his kids. But just even the idea that they could be paired up together must mean that there must be a degree of ownership. And what we're now learning together is that on the release, there has to be a Shtar Shichur. And Baal Peh is not enough. V'harav shemacha al gironu ein garonu machal. And the Gemara notes that for a simple mechila is going to be insufficient. It has to be a shtar in order to release him. Just as another very interesting point over here, Tosfos points out that it certainly sounds like from our Gemara that had it not been for this monkey wrench of King and Haguf, and if it were just a mamonos issue, Mechila does not require any formal kinyan. Tosfos, if you see the second to last Tosfos over here, he makes this point very clearly. Aval im lo haya gufo kanui. Had we not had this issue of the ownership of the guf, haisa mechila malalas, the mechila by itself would have been fine. V'yesh ladaktik mekan, the mechila lo by kinyan. And now, if you're just going to be mochel, it doesn't have to be a formal concretization of the mechila. A simple, I declare, I forgive, is all you need. And Tosfos points out, you could argue the point over here, but it seems to be the simplest reading of our Gemara. Okay, Yisera Alav Ama Ivriya. Okay, so how does our Eved Ivri go free? So we have so far learned in the Gemara that, Shanim, 6 years, Yovel, Giron Kesef. So those are the three ways that an Eved Ivri go free. Now for our Ama Ivriya, so there's one more way to tack on, and that is Konis Atma. Yisera Lav Ama Ivriya. The Ama Ivriya has one additional way, which is Simanim. Her physical maturity. When she turns 12 and she obtains physical maturity, so then she can go free at that point in time as well. Which is something specific to the Ama Ivriya that you do not have by an Eved Ivri. Okay. Ama Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish would now like to introduce the following Chiddush. And for a good part of the remaining daf today, we're going to really test his Chiddush, and ultimately the Gemara is going to, spoiler alert, reject his Chiddush. But Reish Lakish now has the following Chiddush. Ama Ivriya Kona Es Atma B'Misas Ha'av Mirishus Adon. Very interesting Chiddush. You have an Ama Ivriya that was sold by her father. And now she is owned by a man. And again, the objective, hopefully, is that this man who buys her is either going to marry her or have his son marry her. But Reish Lakish now suggests, more than suggestion, it's his opinion, that if during this point in time, her father dies. Now, the father already sold her. But if her father dies, she goes free. So interesting. Just to try to conceptualize this, and for me to even try to explain this, meaning that the sale is only a significant as long as the father's still alive. Meaning, it's almost like the sale is like a perpetual sale, right? It's really hard. It's really hard to conceptualize how exactly this works. But the Gemara is going to make, and first Reish Lakish is going to make an argument as to how he knows that this is in fact so. And he says, look, I'll learn this through a Kavachomer. Mirshus Adami Kavachomer. Umasim Anim Shem Motsim Mirshus Av. Now, consider physical maturity. If she were not sold by the father, when she reaches the point of being a Nara, does her father lose the rights over her? The answer is unequivocally no. The father still has jurisdiction over his daughter, even as she's a Nara. And only when she becomes a Bogeris, then and only then, does she totally out of the jurisdiction of her father. So Simanim does not have her exit from her father. And meanwhile, Shem Motsim Rishosav, Motsim Rishosadam. But as we've just learned, Simanim do remove her from her owner. Misa Shemotziyam Rishosav, Enodin Shemotziyam Rishosadon, the death of the father, which obviously removes her from the jurisdiction of her father, for a very simple reason. Right. But if the death of the father is going to remove her from the jurisdiction of the father, for sure the death of her father should remove her from the jurisdiction of her owner. That's the Kal V'chomer of Reish Lakish. Okay. Later, put the Kal V'chomer on the back burner. Later we're going to come back and we're going to challenge the Kal V'chomer. But in the meantime, however, the Gemara now is going to poke holes at Reish Lakish's theory based on a series of brisos. We begin. First of all, can we learn our Mishnah? We just learned it. Let's say it again. The Mishnah says, how is an Ama Ivriya released? Through Simanim. Now, Reish Lakish, if you're right, why doesn't the Mishnah also include the death of her father? Simple question. So, Tana Vishayim. So the Gemara says, well, the argument will be, our Mishnah is not an exhaustive list. So, my shayir da hashayir. Now, you know the rules, because it's always the Gemara holds by this rule as a tenet, which is that you can one is not an exclusion. If you want to make the argument that the list is not exhaustive, so there has to be at least two things that are not on the list. Because if it's just one thing off the list, you can't say, we just left one thing out. That the Mishnah or the Brisa would never do. Maishar da'ayshayir, misas ha'adon. So the Gemara says, well, the death of the owner. Right? That will let her free, and that's not listed in the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, imishan misas ha'adon, lav shiurahu. The Gemara says, I wouldn't count that as a something that was left off the Mishnah. Why? Dekevin de'ikanami bi'ish. So the Gemara says, because we also know that if the owner of an Eved Ivri dies, now, we don't know this yet, but Rashi tells us, and we're going to learn this later on, it's talking specifically of an Eved Ivri that's nirtza. That went beyond the 6 years and opted into a foreseeable future Eved Ivri. Okay, whatever. The point right now is that this is not limited to Ama Ivriya. The death of the master is also true for an Eved Ivri as well. So lo ketani. So that's why it's not listed in the Mishnah. So, and we're only talking, the Mishnah is only adding the things that are specific to an Ama Ivriya. So the Gemara says, okay, Velanisti Tana Davisheshlo Kitzvah. I'm sorry. Mises Adon Lav Shiru Dekevin Dika Namibishlo Ketani. Oh, I'm sorry. So right now, where do we stand? That in terms of the Ama Ivriya, so there's only one thing right now left off the list. And so our question is to Reish Lakish, well, how come the Mishnah didn't list it? So Ella Nisni Tana Davisheshlo Kitzvah Ketani Davisheshlo Kitzvah Lo Ketani. So the Gemara says, well, I'll tell you why it's on the list. Because the death of her father is a variable. May happen, may not happen, and even if it were to happen, we don't know when it's going to happen. Even if in fact it does happen. Our Mishnah was talking about things which are quantifiable. Things that will happen and will absolutely happen within a given time. 6 years is going to happen in 6 years. Yovel is going to happen. Giron Kesef, that's going to happen. So, but with things which are totally quantifiable and predictable. But the death of her father is something which is not predictable or quantifiable. So the Gemara says, "Va'as simanim de'ein la kitzva v'ketani." So the Gemara says, well, what about simanim? Simanim is not totally quantifiable. And the Gemara goes on to explain. Amar Rav Safra ein lam kitzva lamala, aval yesh lam kitzva lamata. So the Gemara says, well, in terms of physical maturity, so the Gemara says, even though you're right, it may be that she's 12 years of age and she will not arrive at the point of physical maturity. Because physical maturity is just that. It is physical maturity. And she could be 12 and not arrive to physical maturity and she won't go free. But even though it doesn't have an upper limit, it does have a lower limit. And the Gemara goes on to explain. And we saw this back in Nida, Titania. Ben Teisha Shanim She'evi Shteisa Arashuma. If a boy is 9 years of age and he is growing what looks to be hairs, it's the Gemara describes as shuma, it's a mole. It doesn't have the halachic status of a hair. Now, if it's there from 9 to 12, so once again, it simply is not halachically a hair. Rav Yehuda Omer Simon. And Rav Yossi, Rav Yehuda says it is in fact a simon, meaning it qualifies as a hair. Now as Rashi explains over here, it doesn't mean it qualifies as a hair before their bar mitzvah, because as we know, in order to be an adult, you need both, shanim and sa'aros. It simply means that as long as, even if it grew before he was 13, but it remains there after he turns bar mitzvah, it can qualify halachically as sa'aros, so that now he's reached the point of physical maturity. Now, any hairs that grow after his bar mitzvah is for sure going to be a simon. So, even though on the upper limit, you're right, it is a variable, and it's not consistent in terms of whether or not she's going to be considered physically mature at 12, but for sure we know there is a lower limit. Before 12 years of age, for sure, it's not going to qualify as a sa'ara. Okay. So, and that's why Simanim made it into the list in the Mishnah. Meisa Rav Sheshes, Rabbi Shimon Omer Dalet Ma'anikim Lahem. Now, the severance package. Tomorrow we're going to be talking much more detail regarding what the actual severance package is. But, in terms of who is eligible for a severance package, so Gimel Be'ish V'Gimel Be'isha, sorry, let me start again. Dalet Ma'anikim Lahem, a total of four different cases where there's going to be eligibility for a severance package. Gimel Be'ish V'Gimel Be'isha, three apply to a man, three apply to a woman. V'yeta yachol amar dal be'echad l'fisha ain't semana be'ish, v'ain ritzia be'isha. But what you, but there, it can't be four for both genders because semanim just simply are not applicable by a man, and a woman is not eligible for ritzia. So of the four different categories of eligibility for a severance, three apply to a man and three apply to a woman. Now, at this point in time in the Gemara, here's what we think the four are. I mean, the Gemara doesn't spell this out, but Rashi does. And once you know what we are thinking right now, you'll understand what the Gemara's question is. Right now, we think, I'm just going from Rashi, we think that it is, one, 6 years have passed. So again, so at the sixth anniversary of his work, or I guess the seventh, it's going to be six complete years, at the seventh anniversary, so they're going to have a good goodbye party, and at this goodbye party, he's also going to get his severance package. Two, Yotze B'Yovel. He goes out in the Yovel year, whenever the Yovel year comes about. Three, a Nirtza, who leaves when his owner dies. And four, the Simanim of the Ama Ivriya. Those are the four different occasions where there's an eligibility for a severance package.
Why does it have to be a nirtza for the eved to die from the period? Even if it's like not a nirtza, the master dies.
We're gonna explain that later. Now, that's a good question, but put that question on hold, and we're gonna come not today, but I think tomorrow we're gonna address that point. Okay. Now, right now, though, we think right now those are the four cases of eligibility. Now, v'imisa nisne nami misa zav. Now, once again, we are questioning Reish Lakish. You said Reish Lakish that Na'ama Ivriya goes free when her father dies. Now, if that's true, that gives us another case of eligibility for a severance package. And meanwhile, the Brisa didn't list that as one of the cases. And Reish Lakish, you're really going to be stuck over here because the Brisa, when started off by saying there's four. Which, you know how it works. Anytime the Brisa gives us a number, it means four and only four. Now, v'chitem achanami tani v'shayer. Now, maybe, Reish Lakish, you want to argue, well, the list is not exhaustive. The Gemara says, v'ha arba katani. The Gemara says, yeah, but the Brisa says four. V'chitem atamada v'sheish lo kitzva katani v'da v'shein lo kitzva lo katani. And maybe you're going to make the argument that we made previously. Well, the death of her father is a variable, and the Brisa over here was only talking about things which are predictable. So the Gemara says, "Vasimanim de'in lam kitzva v'ketani." So the Gemara says, "Well, what about her physical maturity?" V'chitem achanami kidrav sifra, derav safra. The Gemara says, "Yeah, but we argued earlier, and we're going to try to argue now again that even her physical maturity, there may not be an upper limit, but there is a lower limit." So the Gemara says, "Vaham ika misas adon de'in lam kitzva v'ketani." Misas ad, I'm sorry, v'ketani. So the Gemara says, yeah, but what about the death of the father? The death of the father is, sorry, the death of the master, which is one of the four, at least that's what we thought going into the discussion, and that's certainly a variable. That's totally unpredictable. So now, Reish Lakish, what are you going to say about that? So misas ad nami lo ketani. So Reish Lakish will say in his defense, well, you didn't learn the Brisa correctly. Misas Adon is not one of the four things mentioned, not one of the four options that the Brisa was dealing with. Ve'ala arba ma'inehu. So now, Reish Lakish, what are the four different cases of eligibility for severance? So they are. Now this is where the Gemara is going to change our assumption. Number one, Shanim. Number two, Yovel. Number three, Yovel Shavritzia. Now, admittedly, by the way, it's... You saw that move? Right? In other words, there are two Yovels now. A Yovel for a regular Eved Ivri, and there's a Yovel for a Nirtza. So that's how we got number two and number three. And Ama Ivriya, Bisimanim. Okay. Those are the four. And the Gemara says, and by the way, I want you to know, it makes sense to say that. Why? Ha'chinam imistar b'diktani seifa yata yochol omar arba be'echan mehem l'fisha ein semanim be'ish. Remember how we conclude with the Braisa? Of these four cases of eligibility, three apply to a man and three apply to a woman, or a woman. But you can't have all four apply to a woman because a woman is simply not eligible for Ritzia. And you can't have all four apply to a man because a man doesn't have Simanim. Now, V'imisa b'isha miya mishkachala arba shmamina. Now, if we were right on the Havamina, so then all four do apply to a woman. Because in the Havamina, there is Shanim, which applies to a woman. There is Yovel, which applies to a woman. There is Misas Adon, which also applies to a woman. And there's Simanim, which apply to a woman. So in the Havamina, all four cases do apply to a woman. So the truth of the matter is that Reish Lakish is right. Meaning the way he counted the four cases is much better than the way we originally counted the four cases. Okay. Mesef Rav Amram. One more time, we're going to quote one more Braisa, and this will be the death of Reish Lakish's theory. Ve'elam anikam lahem. The Braisa over here talks about who is eligible for a severance package. So Hayotze Bishanim, right? 6 years are up. Yovel. Misas Ha'adon. And Ama Ivriya Bisimanim. So here this Braisa really spells it out. Ve'imisa nisin ami misas av. Now the Braisa talks about the death of her owner. The Braisa does not include the death of her father. This would have been the perfect Braisa for Reish Lakish to have included Misas Av, and the Braisa doesn't say it. Now, once again, let's try our now classic defenses of Reish Lakish. Well, maybe the Braisa over here is not exhaustive. Nope, the Braisa says these. Well, maybe the Braisa was talking about things which are predictable. Nope. Now, first of all, we're talking about physical maturity, which is not totally predictable. The Gemara says, okay, there's no upper limit, but there is a lower limit. So the Gemara says, Aika Misas Adon. Yes, but in the Braisa, of the four cases mentioned in the Braisa, the death of the owner, which is totally unpredictable. So Tiyufta de Reish Lakish Tiyufta. So the Gemara says, you are right, and we have refuted Reish Lakish's position. So now, we have a Braisa that clearly refutes Reish Lakish. The death of her father is not going to release her from a servitude. Now, Reish Lakish built his argument on a Kavachomer. Now we take the Kavachomer that we mentioned at the beginning of this discussion, and we bring it back to the forefront, because obviously we have to deal with this Kavachomer. So the Gemara says the Kavachomer is not that good. Because in the Kavachomer we were comparing her physical maturity to the death of her father. They're not comparable. Her physical maturity, she is now in a new developmental stage, evident by a physical change in her body. She's a new person. She's a different person. But the death of her father does not create any change within her physically. She came on Ishana Haguf. So the Kal Vachomer is trying to create a comparison between her physical development and the death of her father, but ultimately they're just simply not comparable. Let's do a little bit more for this morning. Tinichada, we learned in one Braisa, Anak Evid Ivri Latzmo, that when you give the severance package to Evid Ivri, so he goes home with the severance package. Which later the Gemara is going to point out, kind of figured that out, didn't we? Like, we didn't need a Braisa to teach us that. We'll come back to that point in just a moment. Anak Ama Ivriya, but when the Ama Ivriya, however, gets her severance package, so Latzma, she goes away with it. Tanya Idach, but now we have a second Braisa. Anak Ama Ivriya Umitsiasa Le'avia. Now, an Ama Ivriya who either finds something or gets a severance package, so it goes to her father. And she doesn't collect her severance package. Ve'en l'rabba el'schar batel b'alvad. Now, as Rashi explains, this is talking about a mitziah. She finds something. Now, if she finds something, so the time that it takes her to find something, that is work lost to her owner. Work, time and work lost to her owner. So the owner deserves the compensation, which the Braisa says he's actually entitled to. Now, but still the father is going to get the mitziah. Now, my love had nafka b'simanim v'had nafka la b'misas ha'av. Now, the discrepancy between the two Braisas is obvious. The first Braisa tells us that her severance package goes to herself. The second Braisa tells us that her severance package goes to her father. Huh? How does that work? So it must be, or not must be, I don't want to say that because, but right now, one plausible explanation is, well, if her father dies, even though I know we just rejected Reish Lakish, but let's just for a moment, let's assume he's right. If her father dies, well, she goes free, and being that she no longer has a father, she'll get the severance package. If her father's still alive, and she goes free, so her father gets a severance package. Because remember, when does she go free? Simanim. Whose jurisdiction is she still under? Her father's. So the Gemara says, huh? She's an Ara. So the Gemara says, so my love, hadanafka b'siman, hadanafka la b'misazav. The Gemara says, no. Lo idiv idinafka la b'simanim. Velo kasha, hadil isa la'av, hadalesa la'av. And the Gemara says, that's not correct. And the resolution is very simple. It's very simple. Right. In both cases, the simanim are going to remove her from her owner. And in both cases, she's going to get a severance package. In terms of the discrepancy between the two prices, it's very simple. If her father's still alive, the severance package goes to her father because she's an Ara, yeah. Still under the jurisdiction of her father. If her father's no longer alive, so she gets to keep the severance package. It's really that simple. Okay, we'll stop over here. And tomorrow we're going to start off with a question of the Eved Ivri getting the severance package and keeping the severance package seems to be unbelievably obvious. And why does the Bryce even have to mention that? And we're going to discuss that.